Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 16th of July, Anno Domini 2016, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, scuff off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. I think we have many more people listening to us today than usual, since the Pokemon servers are down. The Pokemon Go servers are apparently under a DDoS attack, distributed denial of service. And so there are a whole bunch of people just sitting down right now.
That's okay. They're all too tired from walking for 8 miles a day for the last week or so.
I mean, they got that glazed look over their eye, and they don't know what the heck they're doing.
If I've got a glazed look over my eye, it means because I've had too many donuts.
Exactly. All right. The actual news that we were talking about is... For more than two decades,
that's a while,
Microsoft Windows has provided the means for clever attackers to surreptitiously install malware of their choice on computers that connect to booby-trapped printers or other devices masquerading as printers on a local network. Microsoft finally addressed the bug on Tuesday during its monthly patch cycle.
It only took them 2 decades.
20-plus years, yes.
Nice job,
yes.
Guys.
The vulnerability resides in the Windows Print Spooler, which manages the process of connecting to available printers and printing documents. A protocol known as Point and Print allows people who are connecting to a network-based printer for the first time to automatically download the necessary driver immediately before using it. It works by storing a shared driver on the printer or print server and eliminates the hassle of the user having to manually download and install it. Researchers with security firm Vectra Networks discovered that the Windows Print Spooler doesn't authenticate print drivers when installing them from remote locations.
So it doesn't make sure that they are actually a print driver and that they actually do what they say they're going to do.
Exactly.
Okay.
This failure makes it possible for attackers to use several different techniques that deliver maliciously modified drivers instead of the legitimate one provided by the printer maker. The exploit effectively turns printers, printer servers, or potentially any network-connected device masquerading as a printer into an internal drive-by exploit kit that infects machines whenever they connect. And, oh, by the way, you can on the dark web right at this moment buy a script that lets you do that. So... you could be sitting in
anywhere,
Starbucks, any place that has public Wi-Fi.
Sure.
And say, oh, here's a printer, and poof, you're connected to it, and it's not actually a printer.
Right. It thinks it's a printer.
And you're done. Right. Attacker, and this also works, by the way, not only over Wi-Fi, but also over wired networks. So attackers could also reverse engineer a printer and tamper with its firmware so that it delivers a maliciously modified driver. While this approach may seem unrealistic, it was successfully carried out by the Vectra researchers. A separate bug involving point and print protocol also makes it possible for untrusted users on a network to elevate their account privileges to all-powerful administrator status. The Vectra researchers tested their exploits on a mix of devices, including printers and computers running Windows XP 32-bit, Windows 7 32-bit, Windows 7 64-bit, Windows 2008 R2 AD64, Ubuntu Cups,
interesting,
and Windows 2008 R2 64 print server. So that is to say pretty much everything out there. Now,
I don't know. I didn't see any Apple stuff on that list.
Well, that's right. Many of them use the CUPS printers, though.
That's true. Yeah, if you're using CUPS drivers,
you're as vulnerable as everybody else.
Yeah,
right.
Most people are getting the drivers from the manufacturer, but I imagine not everyone is.
Right. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you, 20-year-old Windows bug lets printers install malware. And the choices are, I'll patch immediately... I'll patch soon, maybe I'll patch, and I don't care. At the moment, we have 25 votes, and I don't care, sadly, is winning. And all those of you are the ones who will be calling us next week saying, my computer was hijacked. I don't know what to do.
I thought I had a printer in my house.
Yeah. Suddenly nope. I had a printer. I don't know how that happened. Microsoft must have installed it. And I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right, you will see under Fascinating Stuff, the first link there is the forums. And if you look at the forums, the second forum down is the poll discussion. And right now, at least, the first item in the poll discussion is 16 July 16. 20-year-old Windows bug lets printers install malware. So far, two of us have posted, and we would love to have you join us. Oh, while you're on the Soundbites website, please notice that just above Please Help, where you can make a donation to this show, is a countdown for Windows 10. It's only free for 13 more days.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So remember that. All right, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Brian did from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Brian. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. Oh, you don't want to know.
What happened now?
We're packing up to move.
Okay.
And so we're clearing out the basement.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I have boxes upon boxes and boxes of boxes of boxes of 3.5 discs, 5.5-inch discs.
Wow.
All programs. I got an old Apple II, the classroom one, the black one with the two drives.
Oh, neat.
Suggestions? Well, first, let's start with the discs. Anything that could be used for at all?
Wallpaper.
Coasters?
Coasters. That's what I figured.
A rec room would look really cool with all different, you know, colored discs.
Sure. Or out on the floor put what you call it on it.
Polyurethane.
Oh, yeah, right.
But, a piece of drywall and a staple gun in about half an hour. I think you could do the entire thing.
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, what about CDs?
Coasters.
Somebody might be interested in them, but those technologies pretty much very, very few people care about. And also, of course, any of those CDs or DVDs or floppy disks that have your private information on it should be destroyed with extreme prejudice.
Yeah.
What I would do is take some nice pictures of what you've got, lay it all out, get a nice, well-lit room, take some great pictures, list it on Craigslist, and I bet you'll find somebody who's an Apple II fan who would really love to have a new project machine, or if it's not working exactly the way it ought to, or if they've got something that needs parts, maybe they can keep that machine alive and keep that vintage equipment rolling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that Apple II the old Bell and Howell?
Yeah.
Wow.
I may want that myself.
Well, talk to me.
Yeah, I will.
Okay, I'll give you a discount. Believe me.
All right, believe me. Okay.
Such a deal for you.
Good to know.
I got a deal for you guys. I just want to make sure that it wasn't something, there's a clearinghouse. We'd love to have those.
No, I really don't. I don't know of anybody who wants them anymore, yeah. But I think Dennis is right. Put them on Craigslist and see what happens.
You did just miss the Apple Cider Picnic that was on Wednesday, where we have our annual silent auction. So if you can afford to hang on to it for just one more year, you can wait for that picnic to come around again.
I'm sorry.
Or if you can find
the disk chute.
Something like that.
The hard drive shoot. Right?
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. If you can find a rifle range, it'll take them for skeet.
Right, exactly. All right, gentlemen, thank you very much.
All right, have fun.
Calling, Brian.
Talk to you later, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye. The day is gone.
Yeah.
When people really want.
I just threw out a small drawer, maybe 14 by 20 deep. Of 3.5-inch floppies.
Yep.
It's like, nobody uses it. Flash drives.
Sure.
You put everything on a flash drive now.
I started looking. I found a bunch of them in the attic, and I started looking through them to see if there was any actual data I needed or wanted. And I got about halfway through the first of four boxes, and I thought, I don't care anymore. I just don't care anymore.
Believe in that. Some of the...
If I haven't needed it in 15 years,
right.
It's not going to do me a lot of good now.
A couple of them were AOL floppy disks.
Oh, sure.
Oh, there you go. Did you get free hours with them?
Reformat.
Wow.
I threw all that stuff
away. I have a CD that gives me 105 free hours. 105 free hours
can
in AOL.
Believe that?
Man, oh man.
Wow. The one thing you can do, let's say you go to your attic and you find a box and it does have stuff that might be from a loved one, something that they were writing or mm-hmm. something that you want
backed
to remember.
Up to, yeah.
Right.
You can get a floppy drive that you plug into a USB port on your existing new computer, and that often can allow you to read commonly formatted disks and hopefully at least attempt to rescue the files. Now, the files from back in that era may be very proprietary. They might be WordPerfect files or something. And, you know, WordPerfect is not exactly as popular as it used to be.
But
there are converters
around. LibreOffice will read it.
That's right. Your open source friends have thought of you.
Yep.
and tools
OpenOffice,
like
LibreOffice.
Which you can get for free, no money at all.
Right.
Will help you read those older files.
That's one thing we don't mention enough on this show. There is a product called LibreOffice, LIBRE Office, and the companion product OpenOffice. They're essentially the same code base, but LibreOffice, I think, is a little ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a full Office suite, word processing, spreadsheet, presentation package, database, and it's 100% free. It's available for Windows, Mac, Linux, and it works like a top. So for those of you who do not want to go the Google Docs, iWorks,
Office
Online stuff, this is a nice alternative to that. And again, it's still absolutely free.
That's true.
All right, our next caller is Andy from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hi, guys. Long time listener, and I'm my first time calling you, so keep up the good work.
Congratulations.
Welcome.
Okay, listen, I've got kind of a threefold question involving the upcoming, you know, migration to Windows 10.
Yep.
Okay, I am the self-appointed IT guy for both my household and for my two elderly parents, right?
Yeah, we understand.
Okay. For my parents, my dad has a desktop. My mom has a laptop. My dad's computer, you know, has that icon in the system tray. It looks like it's all set to migrate. But his concern is he may not like Windows 10, and I believe once we go to Windows 10 on his desktop, there is a way to back out and go back to Windows 7. And that way, in the future, if he wants to go to Windows 10, he doesn't have to pay for it, correct?
No.
Maybe, but probably not anymore.
Yeah, we can't state that for certain. Matter of fact, we were wondering, you know, if you download it now and don't install it, after the say the 30th, is it still going to work, or are they going to charge you for it?
Well, no, I would install it, but I thought there was a way to then go back to Windows 7.
Yeah, but
right,
then,
but then that doesn't mean that you'll be able to install it for free again later.
Right.
Oh, I see. So the license key wouldn't necessarily carry over or whatever.
That right. is an unknown that we can't speculate and say for sure yes or not.
Yeah. Right. Now, here's the thing. Windows 10 also has an ISO download, a CD version.
Mm-hmm.
You can download it, burn it to a CD, and if you do it in the correct way, you can't just copy it onto a CD. You have to burn it as an ISO to a CD, and then you have a bootable, installable version. We also do not know if that will work after the 13th.
Right.
After 13 more days, after the
29th.
They say it's free up to the 29th. So I'm saying it's free through the 28th. I don't know what happens on the 29th, whether mm-hmm. it's free that day as well or not. And I'm not going to, you
speculate.
Know, I don't know who at Microsoft actually speaks English. So I'm saying there's only 13 more days, which takes you through the 28th.
I see. Okay.
But yeah, you can certainly go back, but that doesn't necessarily mean you would be able to then again go forward for free.
Yeah, that was my concern because it took him a long time to get settled in with Windows 7 from XP.
Well, the big thing is Windows 7 and XP are fairly much the same.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 7 and 10 are fairly much the same.
Okay.
There are a couple of differences in the start menu, and the way you get to some things is actually easier but different. But the general day-to-day operation is going to be much the same.
Okay.
All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Yes, Steve Ray is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest, and therefore we have no YouTube up today, but you can still give us a call.
I thought that Amber Alert that was on, you know, the flashing signs, you know, looking for this vehicle.
Yeah, right.
It was for him.
You're trying to find him.
That wouldn't be an Amber Alert. That would be some sort of
I don't know what you'd
stay
call
away alert. I don't know what they call them.
Be cautious. If you see this vehicle, avoid it.
Avoid it at all costs.
Silver-haired alert.
Right, right. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like our friend Smiley did from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Smiley. What's up?
Okay, Nick, on those people that like Windows 7 and so forth, and they're worried about whether they'll like 10 or not,
yep,
they can download that Classic Explorer, and then they can change that to whatever they want that'll look similar to their, and they won't be so lost, you know, on the desktop. And you get rid of that box up there with all those blocks in it.
Yep.
So, I mean, that'd be, you know, real helpful for a lot of them, especially that gentleman that just called in.
Yep. Well, there's a thing called Classic Explorer that makes Windows 10 look just like Windows 7.
Interesting.
Now, the tough part is that's a program you have to download and install yourself, and people who are afraid to move from 7 to 10 may not be tech savvy enough to want to do that, but certainly it is a possibility. Thanks. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that gentleman that just called, he could probably do it for his, you know, for his parents. And,
right,
I mean, even other people listening in, you know, this would be a helpful, what do you call it, for those.
Sure. That's a good,
right,
public service,
mm-hmm,
announcement for anybody who is the designated technical advisor for your family and friends.
Yep.
Classic.
Good
Explorer.
Point, Smiley. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Have fun. Yeah, the Windows Explorer. Just like it used to be Internet Explorer, of course now it's Edge, but it used to be Internet Explorer, Windows Explorer, everything was Explorer. The Windows Explorer is that front end that you see, the graphical user interface that you see in Windows 7, in all the versions of Windows.
And that's how you find the files on your computer. It's how you,
right,
see the folders and the windows, and they can look very different from version of Windows to version of Windows, but apparently there's a way to make them skin themselves to make,
right,
them look like other versions. So you can run a very modern OS and get all the security benefits, but still look, have a very familiar look to something that you might be more comfortable with that you maybe had in the a while ago.
Yep. So, all right. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, it sounds like we've got another call.
Yep. It's Andy from Irondequoit again. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hi. Sorry, you guys. I know I had to go on a mic break.
Yes.
But thanks so much for the info on my dad's desktop. My mom's laptop, she's missing the little icon in the system tray.
Yep.
It was there in the past, but somehow over the last few months, it's gone away. Is there a way to retrieve that so I can kind of verify that her system is up to snuff to go to Windows 10.
Yeah, how do you stimulate Microsoft into wanting to offer you Windows 10 if it's not showing that on the screen?
Yeah, it was there before. Mm-hmm. I've seen it, but I don't know what happened.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So did she at some point say, don't ever ask me again?
It's possible.
Interesting.
Wow. Okay. So for Windows 10, there are a couple of things you can do. There's the, oh dear, there's the media creation tool, and I'm trying to figure out how to get to it because I don't have a Windows 10 machine in front of me. There you go. There's a website you can go to.
Now, remember, she's still on Windows 7.
Yep. I understand that.
Okay.
That's okay.
If you go to this website, and it's microsoft.com/en.us/software-download, and I'll put this up on the website as well.
Okay.
Software-download/Windows 10. You will see a Get Windows 10, Look to Upgrade This PC, Upgrade Now button.
Oh, okay.
That'll probably let you get the installer.
Gotcha.
Right, and that'll set you off on the process.
On the process. Excellent.
You said you're going to put that
now,
on the
website. And I apologize if I'm taking too much time here. Now, my desktop, I was all set to go to Windows 10. I have no reservations about it. However, when I ran the little check, mm-hmm. application, I got something saying Cisco Systems VPN adapter for 64-bit Windows, not compatible with Windows 10, may not be able to connect to Internet.
Yep.
That's true. So the Cisco Systems tool, I'm guessing that might be VPN software?
Yeah. Well, it does mention VPN adapter.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the way you connect to the Internet. Now, did you have this thing set up, like, at work or something?
Or to connect back to a work network, maybe?
No. No, okay. This is strictly at home.
Okay.
Huh.
VPNs are typically used by people who have machines at their home to connect back to a university network or a corporate network.
Yes, yes. My wife occasionally works from home.
Okay.
So my guess is that she has, sort of a...
Sure. That's very possible. Now, the good news is Cisco is one of the biggest networking players on the Internet, and they are very interested in having their software be up to date with lots and lots of different kinds of operating systems. I would be amazed if they didn't have a fresher, more recent version that is meant specifically to work with Windows 10.
Okay.
So that may not be as big a hang-up as you're concerned about.
Right. The big thing to do, of course, is to talk to your, or for have your wife talk to her work.
Yeah. Talk to the friendly IT folks there and say, hey, we're considering bumping to Windows 10. Want to make sure that we can still get to the VPN. What should we make sure we're ready for?
Okay, so that really doesn't have any impact on our home usage. It might only interfere with her accessing through the VPN at her work.
Yep, you've got it.
Okay.
Theoretically, yes, that is exactly correct.
Theoretically, yes. And if she were in the future to bring her laptop home from work, this is a non-issue.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. The laptop from work probably is, well, for starters, that's the IT department at work's responsibility, and they can work with you on that.
Exactly, exactly. But as far as just using my desktop strictly for our purposes, home purposes, this should be a non-issue.
That's right. Windows 10, full speed ahead.
All right, great. Thank you so much for your help.
Anytime. There you go. Have fun.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, it's a difficult process when you have a home machine that's also being used for work stuff.
Right.
Who should really have the say as to what's on that and how it works and blah, blah, blah. Changing that yourself probably would be fine, but I would check with work first every time because you just simply never know.
That's right. Yep. Make a quick appointment to talk with them over the phone. I guarantee you won't be the first person who's asked them about that, and then you can get the answer that you can know and trust.
Right. All right, our next caller is our friend Joe from Cheek.
Milwaukee, New York.
There you go.
Pick that right
What's
up.
What's up,
That's
Joe?
Great.
I would say to all these people that are contemplating Windows 10 upgrades,
okay,
go get yourself something like CloneZilla and take an image of your drive. That way, if it doesn't work well, you can revert to exactly the state you were before you attempted the upgrade.
Yep. If that's something that you're comfortable with, that's a very smart thing to do. That way you really don't have a lot of risk involved other than your time. And if you get to 10 and say, you know what, this is not for me, or at least not yet, you can roll back to your previous state and be exactly where you were before you started.
And I'll say this much. I haven't experienced it personally or known people that this has happened to, but They've tried Microsoft, okay, let's revert to Windows 8.1 or Windows 7, and it didn't work. So they were kind of stuck in limbo.
Right, right. Sometimes it does not work well. Most people don't have a problem, but then now you're playing the law of averages. And while you're guaranteed to never win the lottery, you're probably guaranteed to have a problem here.
yep, it's true. But yeah,
well,
thanks, Stu. That's a great
tip. The other thing I've heard, I listen to the Tech Guy, which let's just say airs on another radio station in your market, but on a delayed basis.
Sure.
And he's been telling people for at least months that go ahead, go through the Windows 10 upgrade, and then you get your entitlement to, you know, your activation key for your particular system. You know, as long as you don't change too many things, the usual Microsoft about, you know, change the hard drive, change the CPU and all, change the RAM. Oh, that's too many things. This is a totally new computer. Anyhow, he tells people, well, you can do the upgrade, and then you use the ISO image on a CD to do a fresh install, and your computer will still be entitled. So what the implication here is, I would say CloneZilla your drive, do the upgrade, and if you want to go back, you can go back immediately. And theoretically, and of course nobody knows until we try it after the date, theoretically, you should have that entitlement activation key to upgrade whenever you want.
Right.
Now, I wouldn't wait till past the 29th to try that because you probably won't get free activation.
That's right.
Just downloading the upgrade does not a whole lot, I don't think. Not until you have the actual software go get your entitlement key.
Right. Yep. And we have to remember that Microsoft's goal is to have everybody pay for Windows every year. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Overall.
Subscription model, yes.
Right, and that's what they're aiming for with the next version of Windows, is a subscription model. And because of that, I'm a little leery of telling people that Windows 10 will be free forever. Microsoft said Windows 10 will be free forever. They have also said it stops being free on the 29th. So I guess you get to pick which one you believe. I'm a pessimist.
Well, it's kind of like predicting future Apple products. They're really, really tight-lipped about what they're going to do, and you come out with conflicting rumors. It's like, yeah, there's a whole bunch of conflicting information, even from Microsoft themselves, about what's going to happen.
Right, right. So, you know, pick your news item.
That's right.
And decide which way you want to go. But I'm telling you right now, don't call me when the upgrade stops being free on the 29th.
That's all we can say.
Or heck, you don't want to pay for your operating system in perpetuity. What the heck? Give Linux a try. See if it does what you need to do, or even Chrome OS.
Chrome OS is all most people need, but also, you know, Linux is also free and does a bunch more stuff locally.
Yep.
Excellent. Yep. Excellent. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah,
thank you. Yeah,
he's
yeah,
got
yeah.
A good point with that, with cloning that. If that's something that you think you're comfortable with, that really can help you mitigate a bunch of the risk.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So, CloneZilla, we had a number of links to that on our page over time. Might be down to the second page by now.
Right.
But CloneZilla will allow you to create an exact clone of your hard drive.
Bit for bit.
Bit for bit. So you download CloneZilla, you burn a CD with it. Again, it's an ISO image, so it's not just copying it to the CD or DVD. It's actually burning it as an ISO so that it's now bootable.
Right.
Then you boot with that CloneZilla disk and make the backup to wherever you want. So, you know, the easiest thing to do is buy a large external hard drive of some sort, plug it into USB. USB, not terribly fast if you don't have USB 3, but it's not about the speed. It's about the fact that you're going to get that backup.
Right.
So you make the backup with CloneZilla, then you set that drive aside, and you do not use it for anything else. And then you upgrade to Windows 10. If you don't like it, downgrade. If the downgrade doesn't work, then you boot CloneZilla again and restore your old backup. So it gives you, you know, as I always say, it's that belt and suspenders sort of thing. You've got the backup. You've got the fact that Microsoft lets you go back, and if that doesn't work correctly, you've got to back up a clone in order to restore that machine. And remember, if you have multiple drives, you need to clone multiple drives, right? Because there's no magic. It's one clone, one drive, one clone. So those of you who have multiple drives will need to make multiple clones.
Sure.
And they'll all, you know, if you buy a big enough external drive, they'll all fit on the one drive.
Right. So if this is something, if you're technically adept, and most of our listeners are fairly technically adept, then this is something that probably doesn't scare you. Making a clone of your existing hard drive essentially is like, it's like putting your hard drive in a Xerox copier, and out comes a completely identical copy of it. And that way you can mess with one of them, take it up to Windows 10, and if you decide, you know what, this is not what I had in mind, this is not going to work for me, you can roll back to that starting place.
Right. And in terms of whatever size disk you need to do that, well, it depends on how big your hard drive is currently and how much of it you have used. It doesn't compress much.
Right.
So if you've used 4 terabytes of your 8-terabyte drive, you're going to need a 4-terabyte or more like 6-terabyte external disk.
But they're not that expensive.
No, they aren't anymore, and that's kind of the amazing thing. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're not playing Pokemon. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites.
Still.
Again.
Speaking of Pokemon Go, and so many billions of you are playing it, yes, the servers are down right now. Apparently, there's a distributed denial of service attack, DDoS attack going on against it. So you're going to have to actually, now that you're out in the world, breathing actual fresh air.
Squinting at that giant star.
Not walking into things.
Hanging around in the big blue room. Yeah. Right. And you're going to have to actually talk to people.
Don't forget your sunblock.
Don't forget your sunblock. Here's the big thing. After users impress, notice the Pokemon Go on iOS, that is to say iPhones, iPads, iPods, whatever, requested full access to a user's Google account when signing up. Niantic, who is the company that actually makes Pokemon Go, promised an update to modify the permissions required. Now that update is live, and limits asked for info to just know who you are on Google and view your email address. The new Google permissions means that the game's creators can now see your Google profile information, which includes basic information like your gender and age if you've made that available. You can check what info you're sharing under Google's profile, under the Google profile heading. Niantic's statement from earlier says the company didn't intend for the account sign-up process to ask for full access permissions to begin with, which speaks so well for, A, their QA...
Yes, their quality assurance program people who check things before they're actually made available to customers.
Right, and B, how well their programmers actually followed whatever guidelines they were given. And Pokemon Go actually only ever accesses your Google user ID and email address anyway. Company also said it has begun work on immediately correcting the error once it was discovered.
Oops, our bad.
Yeah, once they caught us, we fixed it. And this 1.01 update seems to back that up. The account access update reduces permissions even for existing players, so no further action is required by users once they update. Early reports, including a source using the 1.10 update via a beta prior to its launch, also suggest that this update improves overall stability, which is not a bad thing. Pokemon Go, which clearly is immensely popular, has been prone to issues including random crashes, game state freezes since its launch last week, so any improvements are definitely welcome. Unfortunately, the update does nothing to fix Pokemon Go players wandering out into traffic or walking off cliffs. That's true.
Yeah.
Or being lured into dark alleys. That's true. Where they get mugged. Yes, all of these things have happened. So, are you playing? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Now, I have to say, for the first 4 or 5 days, I actively tried to ignore as much of this as I could. And the problem is, I have 3 12-year-olds at home. Shout out to the 12-year-olds at home.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been a very popular choice for one of them. They've been asking about it. So I said, all right, let's do this. And my wife dutifully set up an account and let my son start this. We were at the ball field last night, and I handed my phone to my son because he was interested in seeing if there were any Pokemon to catch at the ball field. And apparently there were. So I set up an account for myself, and I let him loose with it. And by the time I got home a couple hours later, I already had 25 Pokemon.
Wow!
And we were just driving around town. I'm still getting used to the whole idea. It's one of the first examples that I've been aware of AR, augmented reality.
Yep.
So you can turn on your camera. You can use it around you. And the goal is to catch these little characters that you then care and feed and take care of and battle against others and try and make it as far as you can and collect all, over 100 different.
Got to get them all.
Little characters. Yeah, that's their tagline. It's interesting. What I like about it is that it kind of maps to the real world, and it is getting a lot of gamers off the sofa and getting them to walk out in the real world. And I think that's a great way to do it. I've also heard a lot of great responses from children who have special needs, where it gives them a chance to talk with others in public about a common interest, something that they might be doing. Because people are going to the same location. They're meeting up at a specific place,
right,
all for the purpose of playing this game together. So you already have a topic of conversation, and that can be really challenging for people who have special needs.
Right. And there are some very interesting points to it. Those of you who played Ingress are very familiar with this already.
I've
that was really the
this.
First AR game. And you pick, there were two sides, and it doesn't matter what they're called. You pick two, there are two sides, you pick one, and then you can meet at those places and battle. Right? Basically the same idea, only this was your agents for Ingress.
Sure.
That was the first augmented reality. So they're using the same places. The Pokestops are the same places as the Ingress maps.
Oh, okay. So they've kind of borrowed that information?
Well, it's the same company.
Oh, I see.
Niantic is the same company.
Ah, okay.
So right now it's all the same places. That's both good and bad. It means that they didn't have to do a lot of setup so they could get the game out quick, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But the problem with that is this. One person was saying, you know what you really want to do? You want to take your... you can buy lures, which will lure a Pokemon to you. Ken already apparently is playing Pokemon Go, and he knows all this. You can buy lures and then lure Pokemons to you. You can also set up incense, which also lures them to you. Incense lures them only to you. Lures bring them in for everybody.
So incense, you mean the funky smelling smoke?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, just make sure.
I'm sure that's what I meant.
Okay.
Okay, so... the problem is those still only work at Pokestops.
Okay.
Either a gym or whatever, right? So
I'm still getting used to all the vocabulary.
Yeah,
Pokestop and gym and...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But gyms are where you can fight Pokestops or where you can get Pokemon.
Okay, so think of it like a gym, like a boxing gym.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
If you followed the cartoon for 50 years, then you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I am woefully out of the loop on this.
Yeah, well,
so I am totally out of the loop.
All right, so
my daughter had all the cards and everything, and she's still got the...
My grandkids did.
She still got that, yeah.
Okay.
But here's the thing, though. You can't create Pokestops.
So
if,
Niantic,
for example,
determined what things in the real world became a destination.
And hospitals were not high on their list because it was originally designed for this game.
Okay, so it's sort of like the flash mobs you used to hear about where people would show up and do a dance together.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
This
same
is
idea.
Where people are going to gather.
Right.
Okay.
The problem is somebody said, wouldn't it be great if you saved your lures and let them free at hospitals
okay.
so kids could... kids who are in the hospital
for
could still play
reason.
Pokemon.
Pediatric ward.
Right. Right.
Got
could
it.
Still play Pokemon. Right. The problem is, unless that place is, as I understand it, and if somebody knows better, please call and tell me. As I understand it, unless that place is a Pokestop, lures don't work.
Okay.
So I think where Niantic is missing the bet here is letting people create limited, because a lure only lasts for half an hour.
Oh, okay.
Right, so you should be able to put a lure pretty much anywhere. Now, obviously what that means is a lot of people just sit in their houses and lure things.
Uh-huh.
But it would then mean that hospitals and nursing homes, daycare centers, whatever, would have the opportunity...
For a lot of randos to show up.
But more importantly for those kids.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, you can't just wander around in a hospital.
No.
Right? So those are safer environments.
Yeah, yeah.
And, of course, you can always tell whether you're in a hospital through Google Maps. So if Niantic just sits down with Google and figures out how to do this, they could add every hospital with a children's ward into the Niantic Maps.
Especially these kids that are just sitting there, you know, in a bed. And that's
right.
You know,
that's the idea.
Sure. Yeah, you know, especially cancer kids.
Yep.
You know, going through cancer treatment and everything else to pick their spirits up, it would get their minds off of, you know, what they're going through as far as pain and everything else.
Well, that's a laudable goal.
Yeah.
So who knows what they have planned, but right now
that would be a very good endeavor for them to pursue.
Now, let's say you had a coffee shop and you wanted people to show up.
Well, there's that as well.
Yep.
Right now, you can't do that unless there's a Pokestop at, say, randomly the public market.
Oh.
Which there isn't one.
Not yet.
But you know what?
And you have no control to add one either.
No. Only Niantic can do that.
Right.
But again, this is so new. I mean, this, you know, is just overnight, just, you know, gone so, ballistic.
Uh-huh. Right.
It's unbelievable.
Yep.
Who knows? We might be talking in a couple of weeks that they're changing this and changing that because of the popularity and everything else and some of the benefits that they can find out of it.
Now, some of the news stories I read this week said that there were people showing up and looking through their phones at the places where they were standing, but they weren't always places that really wanted people to be doing this. For instance, the Holocaust Museum was having visitors.
Right, and now remember, when Niantic set up all these stops, they were for ingress.
Right.
They were for a game that really very few people played.
Yep.
And so,
was that more adult-focused?
Much more adult-focused.
Okay.
It was all adults. So, A, nobody noticed.
Yeah.
And B, it didn't disrupt anybody.
Uh-huh.
Now, using all those same... There's a guy who had his house. For some reason, there's a random Pokestop outside his house.
And he doesn't know why.
He doesn't know why.
Has no
nobody knows why.
To make it go away.
Right.
So the best thing he can do is communicate somehow with the people that are all stopping
or
by.
Or sit on his porch with a shotgun. I don't know what his story is.
Hey, everybody, be cool.
Get off my damn lawn.
Don't be jerks.
I don't know what that's about. But so the inability to create them, for example, in a hospital, and the inability to get them off your damn lawn is a problem that Ingress didn't have. Because A, relatively few people played it, and B, it was for adults anyway.
Unintended consequence.
Right. So we'll see what changes Niantic makes. Yeah, let's talk to Gary, who's been patiently waiting on the line from Greece, New York. Hi, Gary, what's up?
Hi, guys. I have a suggestion and a couple of questions about Windows 10.
Sure.
Regarding the suggestion, your earlier conversation with Andy, if I understood what it was all about, there is another way, I think, to get Windows 10 from Windows 7. Just click, this is what I found, click on the Start button, go to Control Panel, and Windows Update. If you're looking for updates, they're gonna tell you, oh, yeah, here's another one. Download as an optional Windows 10 now.
Hmm. Okay.
Right. And if for some reason his mother turned off updates, then absolutely he wouldn't be getting that.
Yeah, you have to go in manually to stimulate that.
Right.
Yeah. Now, my questions are one about Cortana. My very limited understanding, because I just switched over to Windows 10, is it looks like an overly eager helper.
Yeah.
Do you have to create an account to get this help?
Yes.
Okay. Otherwise, yes. Where do you find a help button?
You don't. You have Cortana. Microsoft, well, here's the assumption. F1? You have a system that you're logging into now.
Yeah.
Did you use an account for that?
No. Well, two of them I had updated by my local independent vendor where I bought the laptops. And the other two I just did myself, and I just said, go load Windows 10.
Okay, so you do have some sort of username and password in there, but they're probably not Windows usernames, Microsoft usernames and passwords. So you want to go, if you want to use Cortana fully, you need to figure out a way to, what you have to do is sign up for an account so that Cortana can figure out who you are and adjust herself to you.
Okay. Well, I don't really want to use Outlook, but I could go to MSN.com, I guess, and do something there.
Probably. I mean, okay. I know that Outlook, you don't have to use Outlook to have an Outlook address.
Oh, okay.
Right? I mean, there's no law. It's like you can get a Gmail address and never use Gmail.
Mm, yeah, that's true.
Right. So, just get the address and let that be your login, and there you are. Now, it is certainly the fact that if you want all of the features of Cortana, like, hey, Cortana, email me a reminder tomorrow, then you got to use the email, but you don't have to.
All right.
If you don't want Cortana emailing you things, then don't bother looking at the email and don't ask her to email you something. It's that simple. But those are a couple of features that you don't have. But so what?
Okay. Well, the other thing that I have it's more of a problem with is getting all the computers connected to a home group. Whatever I had before as a work group doesn't work now, and I've done some searching on the web, and maybe you've already had this question, but I've seen two proposed solutions out there in general. One involves deleting some files from a sub folder in Windows called peer networking, and another one seems to just say, well, shut everything down and then try to start up a brand new home group. And then one by one, start up your computers and attach each one to the home group as individually one at a time.
Right. Look, we have to take a break. Can you stay on the line?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and of course, Gary from Greece, New York. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Oh, well, welcome back, everybody. What a surprise.
What? Is that us?
It's us. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, time sure flies when you're having fun.
We're so professional.
We are that.
I'm going to start coming to rehearsal.
Yes. Oh, we have rehearsal?
Oh.
Now you tell me.
I didn't know about it.
Right.
When?
See? At 3 minutes after the hour, we're Soundbite. So, really, at the end of a break, we come back on the air. Is that what this is about?
Huh.
I guess.
I got to write this stuff down.
We're doing this now?
We are doing this right now, apparently. And we're on the air with Gary from Greece, New York, who was asking about home groups. So, Gary, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, that's too bad. Oh, no. I mean, okay, here's the deal.
You wouldn't treat a member like that.
No, I would not.
No, we would not.
We would never do that. So, here's the deal. What you can do is you create a home group. These are all Windows 10 machines?
Yes.
It just got easier.
News. That's good news.
I'll give you the gist. I'll give you the details. And I've already put a link up on Soundbites. on the homepage. Basically, what you do is you use one machine to create a home group. It gives you a password, which you then use on the other three machines to join that home group.
Okay.
Then all the machines will be on the same group, and you can set up whatever you want to share and et cetera, et cetera. So my suggestion is if you've got a desktop that you leave on all the time, create the home group on that machine.
Okay.
Although you don't have to leave it on all the time, you certainly can. So basically, what you want to do is you're going to go to the Start menu, which is also Cortana, of course. Do a search for Home Group,
all one word. Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then there'll be one of the things you'll get to do is create a Home Group. There's a button for that. And then you get to decide what you're going to share, and you can share nothing or everything or whatever you like. That's
right.
On you.
Somewhere in between.
Right. And then what happens is the wizard will do all the grinding and jumping around and set it up. And then it gives you a home group password. Write that down or click the link to print it.
Or both.
Or both.
Yeah.
Right. And then once and you can always view it or change it by opening the home group in the control panel. And then once you've done that, then you go in and do much the same thing, only instead of saying on the other machines, instead of saying create a home group, you say join a home group.
Okay. But there are no files that I have to delete before I do that, right?
You shouldn't have to, since this is an entirely different setup process. And what you're doing by doing this is saying all the other methods are now defunct.
Okay.
So theoretically, that should not be an issue.
Okay, great. Well, I will give that a shot, and I'll take a look at the link, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Always good when we can find a nice walkthrough that we can post a link to. On
yeah, that's always the best. That's always the best thing
that
to
way,
do.
In
right?
case they didn't hear it or get a chance to write it down, they can visit the website. What's that website URL one more time, Nick?
Which website URL?
Well, the one where we're posting
ours?
All these fabulous...
Soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind
with
you.
With a Y. Ah,
Soundbites.
Right. And that right. way we know where to send people. They can get all the links that we're posting here in town.
Sounds exactly
like,
right.
It sounds like we have yet another call.
We do have yet another call, and this is Dennis, probably a different Dennis,
probably.
From Rochester, New York. Hi, Dennis, what's up?
Yeah, I think I'm different than the other Dennis. Yeah.
Sure. And delighted to be so.
In such a nice way, of course.
Yes. I'm a little confused about CloneZilla, because I had a friend tell me that with CloneZilla, the hard drive you are cloning to must be the same size or larger than the hard drive of your computer, and I can't seem to find verification of that online at this moment.
Right.
Do you know anything about that?
My best guess is that, number one, he's right. That if you've got a source drive that is, pick a number, say 500 gigabytes large.
Mine's a terabyte.
Okay, let's say it's a terabyte. If you've got a source drive that's 1 terabyte large, you want to have a destination that's going to be the recipient of a copy of all the data on that source drive. And it's possible that source drive could be full. Ideally, you would like that the destination to be about the same size, sometimes a little bit larger, and that's just the general recommendation. Now, if we're going to get real specific, probably what you really only need is the ability to have enough space to copy the actual portion of that 1 terabyte drive that you're really using. So if you're only using half of that 1 terabyte drive, it's possible that you may only need a 500 gig or a 750 gig destination drive.
Yeah, I'm using like maybe about 20% of that drive, and or maybe less. And I think because it's a free version, I was told because it's a free version, you have that one choice. You either have a hard drive that's the same or larger, or you cannot use CloneZilla.
That is possible. The good news is even a 1 terabyte external drive is so affordable these days that it may not be something you have to concern yourself too much with. And I think Nick is furiously Googling and trying to come up with details to help verify one side or the other of this discussion.
Well, actually, while I was waiting, I did look on Amazon, and they have a terabyte hard drive for Western Digital for $49.
Oh, wow.
$50.
That's a great price.
Yeah.
And that's very affordable. And that way you know you're covered. Even if you're only using 20% of that source drive, you'll be all set.
Yeah, and the other question I have about CloneZilla is I've looked online, and I don't know which version to download. Do you guys have, I mean, I'm not sure what to pick, whether it, what's CloneZilla versus CloneZilla Live. I'm just not sure where what link to go to get the proper CloneZilla that I'm going to need.
Right, so it sounds like they've got a few different versions available.
Yeah, there's a Live CD, which is a basically a bootable GNU Linux distribution, right? So what that does is you boot that, and it lets you then clone right from that booted CD.
Okay.
Okay.
And that could be advantageous, because that way you're not booting from the same drive that you're using as the source.
Right, and many systems won't let you clone a drive that you booted from.
The other advantage to using that Live CD, to making that and booting the machine from it, is then you get to do something that's really going to help you out. You can use a special kind of copy operation that your computer is very good at called a block copy, and that moves information several bytes at a time from one drive to the other. It's far more efficient, and it means that you're done with your clone in much, much less time.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, and all you have to do then is get that Live CD. You can probably write it to a flash drive, I'm guessing, and then boot your machine from that disk, and then you can get that affordable external drive as your destination and make a copy of your computer from one to the other.
Okay, and lastly, there was a Linux-based CloneZilla and then a different something else-based CloneZilla. Does it matter?
If you're going to use it in that Live boot-up mode, no.
Okay.
Just do the Live one, which I think is in fact, a Linux.
Okay.
If I understand CloneZilla correctly, and I use an entirely different method to make backups. As I tell people all the time, I've got 5 different backups of my hard drive, but I don't use CloneZilla for any of them. I believe the difference is if you are going to create... And I may have their terminology backwards. If you're going to create a clone of the drive, then you must have a drive that is the same size or larger. But if you're going to create an image file of your hard drive, it just needs to be big enough to hold that image.
What's the difference?
Okay.
What does that mean?
Great question. What's the difference between a clone and cloning to a drive versus cloning to an image?
Right.
Image is a compact version of that. In other words, it's like packing it all in one suitcase, and versus just copying it, you're doing file per file. So in other words, if I'm doing a copy, and they used to use this in RAID systems, when a hard drive would get ready to go, in a RAID system you could switch it over to this other drive because it's a clone of it, so it's bootable and everything else, so you would not miss a beat. So when you do a clone of a hard drive, if a hard drive failed, you could pull that one out, put this clone in, and it would boot. You don't have to unpack anything else. It's like just the way the system was before it died.
Okay, so if I'm understanding you correctly, if I only have an image, I want to go back to what I originally had, I must install that image on my hard drive and wait for that to install.
Right.
I can't start up
right.
that
so
other
if you,
hard drive.
So if you make a clone, you could actually swap out drive B for drive A.
Yeah.
If you make an image, then you restore drive A from the file on drive B.
Right.
Okay, that's great. I understand exactly what you're saying.
And
now,
it's usually that software that you created the image with.
You better use that same
software. Yeah, you'd use that version. Usually you have a boot disk. And whether it's a flash drive or a CD or whatever, and you would boot off of that and say, okay, re-image this, and it ask you where that file is, and you'd tell it over on the, say, D drive. It would look for that file and then start unpacking it and putting it back onto the C drive.
Right.
I see.
Dennis, in your particular case, because you're only using about 200 gigs of that 1 terabyte drive, doing a clone means that you have a destination drive that is also 1 terabyte with this particular tool. That appears to be a requirement. If you were to create an image file, though, and you had an existing drive that you could use for destination storage, it wouldn't necessarily need to be 1 terabyte large. It just needs to be big enough to hold an image file that is going to be around 200 gigs because it's going to represent only what was on the drive being used and not the entire drive.
Right. The clone actually clones all the empty space as well.
Right.
I see. Okay. Okay, very good. Thank you, guys.
There you go. Have fun.
Thanks for calling.
The thing I do like about CloneZilla is one of the things you can send an image to is like an SSH server.
Yes, yes. You can save that elsewhere.
Right.
It doesn't have to be locally. You can send that across the network to some other destination.
Right. The only thing I don't like about CloneZilla is, in general, you have to initiate it yourself, which means people put it off.
Sure. Right. It's not a scheduled process that happens whether you're ready to do it or not.
My machine backs up to 5 different places. Now, I only back up my data.
Okay.
Right. Because I've made a clone of my, using an entirely different process, I've made a clone of my boot drive.
Right. So the clone protects you in case you have a problem with your boot drive. It's protects you from hardware failure.
Right.
Okay. All right. So that's your first duplicate copy. And what are the other 4?
And the others are just my home directory, which is all my data.
Okay.
And so I copy that to 5 different places, and every morning at 3 a.m., as a matter of fact.
What are your favorite tools for doing that?
RSync.
Okay.
I use Linux, so I use a product called RSync. And what RSync does is it not only copies just the changed files, it copies just the changed parts of the changed files.
Okay, so it's very efficient at respecting your network and respecting your information flow from one machine to the destination.
Right. So the first time I did a backup, it took a couple of days.
Long time.
But the every night I do a backup, it actually takes longer to search my large hard drive for changes than it does to copy those changes out.
And it says, okay, we looked through 5,000 files, we found 18 changes, and they're done.
And they're done. No, by the way, they were done before I told you that.
Right.
Right, right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is once again Joe from
Chickawaga, New York.
There we are.
CloneZilla does have a feature where it will do proportionality. And actually, that mostly only applies to people that have more than one partition. Most of my disks do have several partition, like for /user/bar and all that.
Right.
So it's a little bit more complicated. But for single partitions where your operating system, all your data, all your files are all on one partition, it pretty much just works.
Yep.
But if you have several partitions, the best bet is to have something bigger. But it does have a proportionality mode where it'll shrink or expand the partition sizes that it makes on the destination disk, depending on what data will fit there. So, like if you go from a 500 gig to a 1 terabyte, it'll just multiply all the partition sizes by 2.
Right. And for the vast majority of Windows users, they only have 1 partition.
Yep.
Does Windows always create a recovery partition?
I was about to say, unless you bought your machine from a nationally known vendor where they may have a recovery partition in there.
Yeah, stick all the miscellaneous stuff.
Right. But even so, if you do a disk copy, then all the partitions go.
It is very efficient, too. It does have a byte-by-byte mode where it will byte-by-byte copy your entire hard disk, but most times it just copies the active file space.
Right. Okay. The only problem with anything like that is that if you are having errors and you clone your hard drive, those errors get preserved.
At the destination.
Oh, boy, yeah. That's why it's great to do a file-by-file type either backup or imaging, sure.
Right. So one of the issues that a lot of people have is, of course, with the registry.
Mm.
If you start having registry issues, backups and restores aren't going to cloning isn't going to help that. But it is good for. So if my system was having problems, so I did a restore and it's still having problems. Well, it's because it was having problems when you did the clone.
Sure.
Right, and so that's what makes it a clone.
The clone.
Everything is the same, including the problems. So if you've got a brand new machine and you clone it, then you're going to be in good shape.
Matt on IRC has a good point. If you clone a virus, when you go to restore, you've just restored the virus, too.
That's exactly right. All right, listen, we got to take a break. Back in just thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Joe. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour. Soundbites. Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester. I'm just watching those sweet dance moves you had there during the break. That was great.
I am the best chair dancer in this building.
Go.
Wow. It's 24 minutes after the hour. We are not as good as we could have been.
Where's the webcam when you need it?
Exactly. Why I was dancing. No webcam.
Rob was probably watching.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Hi, Rob. No, Rob, if he's got a half a brain, he's out on his boat somewhere.
Yeah, he's out on his boat.
Okay.
Well, all you Linux people should be thrilled. There's a new Skype version out for Linux. It is alpha.
Woo!
It is alpha. Right, yeah, right.
What could possibly go wrong?
Woo! It is alpha code. The new Skype client for Windows has been long abandoned. It's stuck on version 4.3 compared to version 7 on Windows, but Microsoft has now belatedly recognized that Skype is at its most desirable when it is available on every platform.
Yep.
To that end, it has created an all-new Skype client. In fact, the new client has two versions. There is a Linux app for users of traditional Linux systems. There is also the Skype web client, which is supported in Chrome on both Linux and Chromebooks. Running Chrome OS. Now,
that's interesting.
It is still alpha. We'll get to that in a minute. Well. Whether using the web or the standalone app, the core code and capabilities are the same. It uses Chrome's WebRTC support to provide a plug-in-free, web-based Skype client. At the moment, this alpha client is subject to certain restrictions. Skype is upgrading its network infrastructure, and the new Linux client right now can only make voice calls. It is also limited to users running the current version of the client on Windows OS 10, iOS, and Android. Communication with the old Linux client isn't supported, nor for the time being is calling to landlines or mobiles. The new client is truly an alpha, and as such is not close to feature complete yet, but with common code being used for the browser-based client too, progress should be relatively quick. The common code should also mean that this time around, Linux doesn't end up getting dropped and ignored. Web usage is too important to let that happen. And let's face it, Chrome OS is a huge seller right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's generally speaking, around Christmas time last year and the year before, it was the top five 2 years ago, and all of the top five on Amazon laptop sales were Chromebooks.
Wow.
And and schools are buying them by the, I believe, gazillions.
Oh, yeah.
And so Microsoft clearly looks around and says, we're not there.
Right.
We're not on any of these devices.
It's a growing platform, and we should be there and represent ourselves.
Right. So they're but having
that's,
a, so
that's not going to happen. I mean, again, they're going to be too late to come to the table.
Right.
And, I mean, when I can get something, you know, like I said, pay $250, I've got a 15-inch Chromebook, and I don't have to worry about viruses, spyware, malware, and no updates
and
to,
of course,
to pay for.
Right. You see the little button, you click it, and bang, you're updated. Reboot, and you're done.
Yeah.
The other thing, of course, is that I can do everything Skype can do in Google Hangouts, which does work on Chromebook. So Skype sees themselves losing a market as opposed to not just being in a market. They're actually losing it.
Yeah, they're...
Because if I say to you, you know what, I can't do Skype, but we can meet in Google Hangouts. Oh, wait, I can get that on my Windows machine, my
tablet,
Mac,
whatever.
My iOS devices, my Android devices. Sure, let's do that.
Yeah.
Suddenly people aren't on Skype anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's free. Not what they want.
And that's not what they want. So how important is it that you get Skype? Nah, to me, not particularly.
Mm.
Honestly, I do everything in Google Hangouts now, so who cares? But all right. So if you're looking forward to having Skype available on Chrome OS or Linux, give us a call. 985-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, like you say, again, it's another free, you know, service. And no reason anybody can't get the Google thing up.
Right, right. Skype has changed considerably from when it first came out.
Well, Microsoft
and I think in
took
response
it over. What do you want?
Well, but no, I mean, and for the better, in response, I believe, to Google Hangouts. In Google Hangouts, I can talk to 10 people simultaneously.
Okay.
And Skype was 2, one-on-one.
Yeah, sure.
And now it's 10.
Okay, so now you can make a true group call
right,
with Skype.
Right, right. Now, as with all of these things, it depends entirely on the quality of your internet connection.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's anything.
Ken is here. Ken Worcester.
Yep.
Dennis's favorite dad.
Let's have him say hello.
Hello.
Hey, good job. Good job, Ken.
All right.
Ken is here. Dennis brought his father because they don't let Dennis out by himself much.
No, I got to have a handler.
He's got to have a handler. Today it's Ken.
I'm rolling deep here.
Tough job, but somebody's got to do it, and Ken looks like he's up to the challenge.
That's right. I brought the cinnamon buns, and he just followed out of the house.
They look good. I will be partaking later. But here's the deal. When you have a product like that, you really need a good network connection. Now, I have Greenlight.
Yes, a subject that you make sure to bring up every time I'm here.
And those of you who do not need to have a fair... Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. I know that you mean that from the bottom of something or other. But for those of you who are on a lower speed, and I don't mean just lower than Greenlight, but in generally lower speed connection, 1 gigabit, half a gigabit.
The rest of us peasants, yes.
Yeah, the rest of you peasants.
Us peons.
No, the rest of you peasants would mean you meant peasants. but if you have a lower speed connection, or a connection that's heavily used in your household. So, for example, Steve joins us in Second Light every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And he often has a problem because his wife is streaming a movie, his son is playing an online game with 16 friends and voice commands and everything else, and he's trying to do Second Life, and it's a little bit stuttery. If you were the only person, you know, mm-hmm. if you were on Google Hangouts, it would be very much the same.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly if he had 9 other people in a room with him, it would slow down considerably. Nobody can guarantee, and the same is true of Skype, whether it's Skype or Google Hangouts or anything that has 10 people doing video simultaneously, nobody else can guarantee the quality of your connection. But mm-hmm. if you know, the faster your speed, the fewer people on it at the time, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you have a better shot at it.
Absolutely. Yeah, the other thing I remember about Skype was, and again, this was several years ago, is that even if you weren't actively on a call, sometimes Skype would, and again, this may have changed, Skype would use some of your bandwidth to route other people's calls as well in order to give them more reliability.
Yes, and I don't know that it still does that. That's a good question.
I'm not sure if it does or not, but that's worth investigating.
That's a very good question. It certainly isn't going to happen on a Chromebook or whatever. But
right. Yeah. But in the era of data caps and other things, that would be something to be aware of if that's an app that you leave.
Why do we still have data caps? I do not understand why we have data caps.
Because it's very simple. Greed.
Oh, yeah.
Because we have shareholders.
That's
greed.
A shareholder.
It's greed.
Shareholders it is. The greed of the shareholders. The thing is, we don't need, we you know.
Third world countries have better
plans
than we do.
Right. That's exactly right. And I'm waiting for all of the stories about kids using up their parents' data plans in about 2 hours doing Pokemon Go. Mm-hmm. We're already seeing that people are, you know, carrying the battery pack, those extra battery packs.
I got a message about it from my favorite battery pack manufacturer this morning. It said, hey, if you're out training all your Pokemon, boy, you should probably want some extra battery.
Yep.
By the way, we've got those right over here.
Yep. they're selling like hotcakes because the amount of battery that you use, because it's not only that you're using a bucket load of data, which keeps your radio running, which drains your battery, but you're also using your camera, which really drains your battery.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think you can turn off the camera if you want to. And it just displays a map. It's less fun.
It's a lot less fun, and so people aren't doing it. Mm-hmm. And but you can do that, absolutely.
Wait a minute. You got to explain here, Lucy.
Okay, Lucy, here's the deal.
Not time to explain.
What's this video?
Clonezilla. Clonezilla.
Wait a minute.
Pokemon.
That was the last half hour.
Godzilla versus Mothra.
Yeah.
Mothra.
Oh, for us that haven't gotten into this so-called game.
Right. Here's the deal with Pokemon Go. You go out in the real world and you look at your phone. You look at the camera on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're walking down the street. You see the street in front of you. If you're at a Pokestop and there is a Pokemon there, you will actually see the Pokemon standing in the street or on the, hopefully on the sidewalk.
Looks like a little stuffed animal style.
Yeah, I know what Pokemon is.
Yeah. So you will actually see them in the real world. That's why they call it augmented reality.
Okay.
If you were to look at the sidewalk not on your phone, you would not see a Pokemon. But if you then look at that sidewalk with your phone, you will see a Pokemon in the game. You have to be in the app.
Yes, right? You look through your phone.
Right.
Yes.
If you look at this, and
you sure these like we were just talking about other companies that are having the caps and all that. You know, as far as data, aren't somewhat behind.
Oh, if I were Verizon, I'd be paying Niantic anything they wanted to be on my network.
And,
absolutely.
Oh, yeah, let them eat up their data. We'll sell more data plans.
Abso-flippin-lutely. So,
I mean, I'm just saying, it might not be true, but
you just caught this particular breed of Pokemon. Now watch the following commercial.
Yeah. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
There's a lot of potential for that, to keep
And Niantic is talking about selling more ads. They're talking about selling Pokestops.
Sure.
So if you want to become a Pokestop, you can buy it.
Yeah.
And in fact, for businesses, that's a hell of a deal.
Sure.
Right? If you can say to people, we are a Pokestop, come on in, and then I'm willing to spend a buck for half an hour of a lure?
Uh-huh.
A pokey lure, and I say, okay, here's my 99 cents for the next half hour. I will be drawing Pokemon to my place. Hmm. So not only am I just a Pokestop, but let's say my slow hours are 3 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's bring people in from 3 to 6.
Right.
I'm a Pokestop. If I were McDonald's or Burger
diner,
King
or a local diner,
Starbucks or a local diner, or say the public market
or a bookstore,
Books.
Remember those?
I remember those.
They were great.
They're like blogs on paper.
They probably wouldn't have it in a bookstore because too many folks would wander around running into other people.
Right.
And, bookshelves and everything else, because instead of reading.
I used to have that problem reading. I used to be, I made my notes since I was a kid. Why do you think I wear bifocals now? I used to read a book. The first thing I did when I'd get up is I'd pick up my book. Then I'd turn on the light.
Uh-huh. Well, you want to be ready.
Exactly.
Waste not a lumen.
Not a single lumen. All my life I've walked into people. I never knew how to get, to this day I don't know how to get anywhere. But it was because when my parents were driving, I was reading a book.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In the back seat. There was, none of this reality business for me.
I have quizzed my kids from time to time. Who remembers how to get to Wegmans?
Yeah,
and most of the time they can sort of get me in the general direction to get started, but not quite sure which road or how far to drive or what's next to it or across the street or that kind of thing. So that's an interesting game you can play with your kids.
Yeah, and one they will lose every time,
or you go on some really good adventures.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Even better to ask your 14-year-olds who have the phone surgically implanted into their hand these days.
Oh, no kidding.
Who are not always interested in getting their license. And even if they did, they're not sure where they're going to drive to because they don't know how to get anywhere.
Right. Well, but that's part of the problem with it. I don't know if you saw it. There was a news item this week that two Pokemon players walked off a cliff.
That's not good.
walked off an actual cliff.
Get out.
Playing Pokemon. And that's because they were following the Pokemon in their phones.
Yep.
Not looking where they were actually walking.
And this is something we need
Seriously?
To...
Seriously?
No, this was a legitimate news story. Geez, it's horrible.
Yeah.
So...
So yeah,
like I say, I saw a couple of news articles in that on TV and that how the different crazy people are meeting and all that, and it's like, oh boy, another thing just to get your nose buried into that darn phone.
All right, check out this email that I just got this morning, Nick. This came from a nationally
wild
known
offer appears
a nationally known donut and coffee emporium that America might run on. And and they were leveraging the idea that that this is a very popular thing to do. So while you're out and about and strolling around, boy, you're probably getting a little peckish.
Oh, this is excellent. They actually don't say...
They don't say it specifically.
The word Pokemon anywhere.
No, I'm sure they'd have to...
Pay for that.
Cite royalties. That as a trademark.
Yeah.
But...
Although I suppose they could call them... Pokemon is short for Pocket Monster.
Yes.
So they could probably use the phrase Pocket Monster. I don't think anybody can...
Well, yeah. As long as you're not doing it in January or February in time for the big game, you can probably get away with
right. But this is pretty cool. A wild offer appears. Catch bonus points. You're training all day. Oh, that's very funny. Yeah, that's very funny. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, Ken Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
Ken Worcester. And I'm Dennis Worcester.
44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and you can call us 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Users of Microsoft's OneDrive have begun receiving notifications that their storage allotments have already been or will soon be reduced to 5 gigabytes. The emails to OneDrive account holders were the first step in a process that Microsoft announced last year as part of a broader reduction in cloud-based storage allowances. The free amount was to be lowered from 15 gig to 5 gig, and another 15 gig that many had, the photograph-specific camera roll, for example, was to be erased. In April, Microsoft warned OneDrive users that the automatic reductions and access restrictions would begin in July, where accounts with more than 5 gigabytes of content would be marked read-only. Users would be able to view and download files stored in such accounts, but they would not be able to add new documents, photographs, or other files. Microsoft has pledged that customers whose accounts exceeded 5 gigabytes will be able to access their files for 9 months, or until around the end of April 2017. Some OneDrive customers have received emails telling them that as of July 13th, their accounts were set as read-only. Others have gotten similar messages, but with a July 27th deadline, making the email a 14-day warning, giving users 2 weeks to remove enough files to drop the total under 5 gig. Additional restrictions are to be placed on OneDrive accounts next year. In April 2017, Microsoft will lock accounts in excess of 5 gig, blocking users from accessing all files. 3 months after that, Microsoft has said it may start deleting files in overstocked accounts. Because, drive space is so expensive.
I was just about to say this.
OneDrive exactly. OneDrive users with a free account subject to the 5 gigabyte... See, and there's the word right there, free account.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right? They have several options. They can reduce the number of files they store online. They can purchase additional storage, or request a free one-year subscription to Office 365 Personal, a subscription service that comes with 1 terabyte of OneDrive space, which may also go away at the end of 1 year.
Again, greed.
Right, which only puts off the problem for a year and potentially make it much worse, but it's still something. There's an FAQ on Microsoft's website that when I get a second, I'll post online.
Okay.
So are you using OneDrive? And if so, what's your alternative? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. 15. Now, how much free space do you get on iDrive or whatever they're calling it this week? iCloud.
You know, Steve would know that off the top of his head, but I can look it up.
Yeah.
Give me a second.
That's fine. Google gives you 15 gig.
Yeah.
And then every year, they have a survey you take about security.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take the survey, they give you an extra 2 gig. So I've got 17 right now.
Thing of it is, though, is I've been just using, converting everything to Google Docs.
And that doesn't count.
All my photos. I've got over 4,000 photos up there. They're all under 16
megapixels.
Yep, megapixels. And again, no charge.
No charge. And that's the thing. If you use Google Docs, whether it's the word processor, the spreadsheet, the presentation package, whatever, all those files do not count against your quota. So I've got 15,000, literally, documents in Google Docs. They're using zero storage space.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What's taking up storage space is some PDFs that I've got up there and things like that. I've also got, coincidentally, approximately 15,000 pictures that I've uploaded because I upload so fast to Google Photos.
They're all stored inside
the limit. Right. There's a, you know, if you're under 16 megapixels, they're also free storage. So those don't count against my limit. So right. I've got terabytes of stuff up there.
Sure.
That costs me nothing and that doesn't come out of my 15 gigabyte limit.
And right. I think I'm just about up to a gig. So like you say, I've converted everything to Google Docs, Google Spreadsheets, and my photos. And the beauty of it, again, is whether I'm on my phone, my tablet, home computer, or I could be somewhere else, you know, using somebody else's computer, log into my Google account, and pull it up. And I can, you know, get to any documents, any photos.
Right.
And, you know, again, you can sit there, as we've pointed out before, I could do a search on, say, cars.
Sure.
And it will go through all my photos and find cars in it.
Or canoeing.
Yep.
Anything. You just type in something and it'll find it.
All right. I've done the research here. The iCloud storage plans, they give you up to 5 gigs for free.
Nice.
You can get 10 times as much for $1 a month. So you get up to 50 gigs for $1 a month, which is probably right around the sweet spot of, I think, a lot of people are going to be at.
Right.
If you need more than that, if you need to go from 50 gigs up to 200, so four times more, then that's $2.99 a month. And if you need 1 terabyte of storage, you're at $10 a month, about $120 a year. Which for a terabyte is not horrible. You know, naturally, it would be cheaper to get a 1 terabyte drive and keep it there at your house. But if you need cloud storage or you want to make sure that your information is available from all of your different devices,
mm-hmm.
or if you need to be able to share things easily to other people across the internet, cloud storage is a great way to do that. Yep. Also, I should mention, if you work at the University of Rochester, check in with your IT department. I know the University of Rochester has a relationship with a cloud provider called Box. They have a very unique offer that I won't go into, but will be to your advantage to check into.
Right. I actually have 19 gig on my Google Drive.
All right.
Because I've done the survey thing twice.
Okay.
Right? So I get an extra 4 gig, and I'll do it again next year, get another 2 gig, and next year, and next year, and next year. And I'm using 2.25 gig of that.
All right. So if I have a question, do I have to call in on my cell phone and go through the phone screening process, or can I just ask it?
You?
Me.
Well, all right, just for the heck of it.
All right, so I
we have Dennis on the mic from Rochester, New York.
Very local call. Yeah, I'd like to take a shot at the trivia.
Yeah.
Tell him what he would have won, Johnny.
Oh, not a heck of a lot. Free parking through the duration of the rest of the show.
Yeah.
So I took the bait, and I got the Google Photos uploader installed on my Mac at home.
Oh, yeah.
And I handed it a very large collection of about 75,000 photos.
Yeah.
And several weeks later, the upload has completed, but every so often I would get a message that would pop up in my notification center that says, we had trouble uploading 12 pictures. And then 2 weeks later, we had trouble uploading 6 pictures. And then a couple days later, we had trouble uploading 2 pictures. And my question is, which 12 pictures, which 6 pictures, which 2 pictures did it have trouble uploading, and why? And
that's a good question.
How do I know?
The likelihood is that if you don't get that same message again, those pictures eventually uploaded. So it was likely to be a network issue.
Okay. It just didn't complete within, it timed out.
Right, it timed out. And then it times back in again, and it uploads the next set.
Okay. So I'm concerned that I don't want to lose, you know, a few dozen of, admittedly, several tens of thousands of photos.
Right.
But they're important to me, and I want to make sure that they're all retained.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I don't have an answer for you right now, but I will look into it.
Okay. I'm going to keep checking log files for it and see if I can get more details. But that's something I'm concerned about.
Yes, you should be. Yes, you should be. And you said it was $1 a month for 50 gigs.
Yep, that's right.
It's all
there.
And there's a parity here with Google Drive. It's $2 a month for 100 gig.
Right. And so, Apple's working on a similar smart searching algorithm. So you never have to tag your photos and say, this one is of us in Alaska. This one is of us going down a water slide. This is one of us playing baseball.
Right.
You can simply put in those terms and it will automatically have looked at the content of the photos and be able to recognize, what does baseball look like? What does canoeing look like?
And of course, Google is search.
Sure.
They've been doing that forever.
It's kind of their thing.
I did tag one picture with my wife's name, one picture with my daughter's name.
Okay.
So now I just say Elaine, and I see all the Elaine pictures. I say Amelia, and I see all the Amelia pictures.
Wow.
So I can say white car, and I get all the pictures of white cars. One came up with a red car, and everybody said, ha-ha!
Uh-huh.
Google got it wrong. He said, no, if you look through the window of the red car, you'll see a white car in the background.
Incredible.
You know, they're Google. They do search. That's their thing.
They're pretty good at it.
But yeah, and that's what makes Google Photos and Apple, what is it called? Apple Photo?
Apple Photos is their new tool, yes.
That's what makes it so valuable. By giving them all my photos, and I'm sure Apple does the same thing with Google, I can tell my phone every time you take a picture, upload it.
Yes.
Right. So what it does is it makes them easy to look for.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, if I say birthday, I get lots of pictures of candles with cakes.
Sure.
And the people who are there with them. Cakes with candles, rather.
It's all good.
It's all good. And so that's the beauty of that thing. And that's pretty cool. I'm sure it's the same for Apple, but for Google, you know, any attachments you send or receive in Gmail also count as part of your storage. So,
wow.
That's, people send me PDFs and things like that. That's how that happens.
Uh-huh.
But in general, that's a beautiful thing to be able to store documents and to save them and to retrieve them from any device.
That's right.
You know, as long as you've got a network connection, you got your stuff.
Right, and you can send it to someone else.
You can easily send it to someone else. All right, that's it. Apparently, we're done for another week. You've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense. And I specifically want to thank Dennis Worcester.
Thank you.
And Ken. I want to thank Ken for being his bodyguard and keeping him on the straight and narrow.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And Dennis for coming in to take over for Steve.
Yeah, sure.
Who is still one step at me. Will we see you next week, too?
It is possible.
That will be excellent. I want to thank Dave Enright. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank all of you for listening. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him from getting too crazy. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.